Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, every day of the Davis Cup Finals so far has felt quite dramatic, but I think today has probably won. Because both ties, I mean, first time we've had two ties in a day, both of them have been incredibly dramatic. And unfortunately, we don't have a full complement of podcasters for you to discuss them. We have Catherine and we have myself, David. And Matt would love to be here, but halfway through the second rubber of the day between Italy and United States, he started to feel unwell. And let me tell you, from personal experience, when Catherine Whittaker tells you to leave work and go to bed, you want to do it.
The irony of David telling Matt to go home.
I was the first one off the spot.
Look after yourself, Matt. Sleep is so important.
I was the first one to say it. It's just that it was only when Catherine said it that it seemed to have any effect, because he knows not to mess. Look, he's just under the weather. Hopefully he will be feeling great tomorrow. The thing with Matt is usually he responds to every single WhatsApp message in about 4 seconds max. And the fact that we haven't heard from him for about the last 4 hours means that Catherine and I are hoping that means he's fast asleep and therefore recovering at a rate of knots.
Yes. Proud of you, Matt.
Yes. Get well soon, Matt. You are much missed. And I think we should take today in chronological order because it'll take some remembering, because it's 13 hours since the USA against Italy actually started. I mean, in fact, 14 hours, because we're an hour behind, aren't we? They started at 10.
9 a.m. UK time, David.
And you were up for that, weren't you?
Nearly. It's too early. Too early.
We finished last night in the early hours. So, I was up to take my kids to school. And so I did see the opening balls of the match. And honestly, I feared the worst, Catherine, when I saw that schedule. You know, the amount of times we've seen matches, even at 11 o'clock or 12 in places that are empty and cavernous and echoey and dispiriting. And this place was packed at 10 a.m. local time in Malaga. I mean, I don't exactly know how they achieved that. I mean, I did hear that from the commentators that they'd bust in 50 schools worth of kids into the arena, which holds, I think, 7,000 or 8,000, something like that. And there was a heck of an Italian contingent in there making their voices heard. It was a brilliant atmosphere for a non-home team at 10 in the morning.
I was not expecting that at all. Exactly as you said, I feared the worst with that scheduling. I thought, well, if I can't be bothered to get out of bed and it's in my living room, I'm not sure he's going to bother in Malaga. It was so fantastic and such a pleasant surprise. And, you know, if it was I've absolutely no idea, but look, if it was a case of, you know, organisers looking down the ticket sales and going, crikey, we're going to be empty for this Thursday morning USA Italy tie. What are we going to do? Let's invite a load of schools down. Great. Cracking. That is absolutely what you should do in that situation. And kids bring the vibes.
Yeah.
I recently went to a late morning London Film Festival screening of the new Matilda adaptation, and it was mostly children. And my heart sunk a little bit when I was sort of queuing to get into the auditorium at London South Bank Centre with a bunch of sort of 11-year-olds. I was thinking, oh my God, all I'm going to hear is, you know, I got all grumpy, David. You'll be surprised to hear I got grumpy. But actually, it was one of the most wonderful, joyful experiences I've ever had. Oh. There was something very pure about it. And very in the moment. It was wonderful. And there were some of those vibes in Malaga today. And it was all the more special that it was such a surprise, I think.
Yeah, it was. And look, they weren't just locals, because that was a passionate crowd from Italy. And, it's closer than some of the countries would have to go. Of course it is. But even so, it felt like an Italy home tie to some degree. And there was some noise as well for the United States, but it was just a great, and the beauty of it was that you started with a match between, I think if you handpicked two players to perform in front of a full house in the Davis Cup currently, I don't think you could get better than Lorenzo Sonego and Francis Tiafoe. They are showmen. They are people that live for the moment. They were feeding off each other almost. I think that they were getting a kick out of almost performing in front of one another and seeing who could come up with the most absurd shot and celebrate it the most wild manner. And the results of that particular rubber, I mean, obviously, in the end, Italy went on to win this whole thing 2-1. So they're through. We'll get on to the controversy that accompanied all that again, the double situation afterwards. But, I mean, that was a shock result. Sonego's had a terrible year, really. And Tiafoe's had a great year. And it was 6-3, 7-6.
Yeah, and I, as already confessed, I did miss the very early stages of this match because it started too early. Not because I overslept, but because the tennis started too early. But I didn't think Tiafoe played too badly. And I, if I'd seen the result on paper and not caught any of the match, I thought, oh, maybe Tiafoe, you know, season ended a couple of weeks ago, didn't it? He's been on holiday, I think. Maybe he's a bit sluggish or not quite on it. I thought, second set particularly, I thought he looked really good, looked pretty sharp, hitting the ball well. Lapses here and there, but that is still kind of what you get with Francis Tiafoe. I thought the way that he was hitting the ball and moving, I thought was pretty impressive, and he was thriving in the atmosphere. The problem was down the other end, Lorenzo Sonego was thriving even more. I mean, he's a guy that's probably thinking, why couldn't every match in my year be a Davis Cup match? I don't understand him as a tennis player, Lorenzo Sonego. I remember watching his breakthrough. It was Rome last year, wasn't it, where he really brought himself to our attention and we all realised he looked just like the original Karate Kid, and that was all very exciting. And then he's pretty much disappeared from the radar since then in terms of relevance at the top of the game. But the game is that it's easy on the eye, his game, isn't it? It's very, very good to watch, particularly when he's electrified like he was today. Unfortunately, the very latter stages of this, so I missed the early stages due to sleep, and the very latter stages were completely ruined by my not realising I was watching the stream on quite a substantial delay. So my screen has Francis Tiafoe was set point in the second set, all drama, it's all hanging in the balance, looks like it's going to a third. And then a tweet lands on my phone saying, Italy win the first rubber. Oh, okay.
I did wonder why
the balloon was
you
popped.
Commented on the news that one of the tennis balls had broken by the power of the hitting when I'd seen that 30 minutes earlier. And I was thinking,
there were a lot of times when people were texting, oh, what a rally. And I thought, it was all right. Calm down, lads.
Yeah. And I was thinking, crikey, another ball. What's wrong with these balls? It turns out it was the same ball, different time. Anyway, so we had that as an upset win for Lorenzo Sonego. That was it then equalised by Taylor Fritz beating another Lorenzo, Massetti, 7-6, including a 10-8 tiebreak, 6-3. I thought Taylor Fritz was put in a very mature performance and did well to withstand an opponent who is an electrifying player in himself. And I don't get Lorenzo Massetti really, Catherine, because he burst on the scene 2 or 3 years ago, didn't he, and caught our attention, and it was all upward trajectory, and we've had the issues, the misfires where he's pulled out at two sets all after being two sets up against Djokovic for the fans and all that, and he's lost lots of matches, and we've talked about this guy doesn't have the fangs to put people away, and yet I watched him today, and I think some of the shot making and the visual of his shot making is as exciting a tennis player as I can imagine in the game today. In the absence of Federer, I can't think of a more exciting player to watch, really, with a one-handed backhand and an all-court game as a sort of 21-year-old. You know, I know there are people like Dominic Thiem and all these sort of people, but this guy...
Yeah, Carlos Alcaraz says hi.
Yeah,
David.
I know, but they're different. They're different. This guy's got the classical backhand.
Yeah, it's...
He's got to come good, Catherine. He has to. Because it feels like...
I have my doubts, you know.
The sport needs him to come good and join the party.
I know. I'm into it as well. I'd love it to... I watched him play Djokovic in Paris, and it was just a spectacularly disappointing performance. You know, losing to Djokovic is fine. It was the manner of it. You know, it was limp. And you know, compare and contrast to Holger Rune in the final, who again, not so much about the result. It's about the way he walked onto that court, the way he dealt with going a set down to Novak Djokovic. It's just completely different mentalities and personality types, and can you learn to grow fangs? I don't know. I have doubts. Taylor Fritz was the biggest part of the reason why I picked the USA to win the Davis Cup, which now looks spectacularly naive and stupid. But his maturity, I thought he would be a really significant talisman of this team. I thought it would be a real marker of how far he's come maturity-wise. And I suppose that still stands up as a piece of reasoning, because I really did think that he did that today. He did his job very professionally and very maturely. It must have been a strange thing emotionally to bounce back from that semi-final in Turin, and for there to be an extra leg of the season on top of that. It's been a long old time in Europe for him, away from home. He didn't go home in between Paris and Turin. I, a couple of years ago, I think that match would have been very different for Taylor Fritz, potentially, no matter who the opponent was. And I think still positive takeaways for him as an individual, if not for the United States as a team.
Yeah, I agreed. But then it came down to the doubles, and we'd had endless conversation about the omission of Rajiv Ram from this team, a four-man team selected by Marty Fish. His explanation to Matt in last night's show, in which he just said he he felt this combination was going to be better without Rajiv Ram there. And when the absolutely baffling thing still remains that he only had four players and he could have had a fifth, and Rajiv Ram desperately wanted to play so and be there. So it still is a mystery to me, that, and even more of a mystery given that Jack Sock and Tommy Paul were beaten 6-4, 6-4 by Fabio Fanini and Simone Bellelli, who were excellent, who were very sweet at the end as well. They had their arms around each other, and Bellelli was referring to, or Fanini was referring to Bellelli as my brother. And it was lovely, actually. And Felipe Valandri, the captain, was just bouncing off the walls with excitement. And but that is a really, really bad loss for Sock and Paul. Not that their opponents aren't good, but I mean, they weren't close. They weren't even close. Sock is talked about as one of the best doubles players in the world. It's something that we roll off the tongue, really. But he didn't look like that today. He was nowhere. He looked like a player who just wasn't really prepared, to be quite honest. And Rajiv Ram, well, what's my immediate thought was, well, what's going through his mind? And within about 4 minutes, he tweeted, "How's everyone's Thanksgiving going?"
I love that he tweeted that.
Yeah.
I really loved that tweet, David.
Joe Salisbury, his...
It was just the right amount of sass.
It was. Joe Salisbury, his partner, who he won the ATP finals with last week.
This was good as well. It was all really great, sweet spot aggro.
Then posted on Instagram, "If only USA had somebody better for doubles. Oh, wait." which is quite a thing to post.
I love that he's done that. I love that he's backing up his partner.
Yeah,
his partner, who is apparently reading between the lines, hasn't been picked for sort of team chemistry reasons. And okay, chemistry is entirely about the individuals involved. It can't be transferred between people. But Joe Salisbury, who, you know, has the ultimate experience of great chemistry with Rajiv Ram, I love that he's backed him up like that. And it's not a call that is aged well at all.
Well, Marty Fish came into a press conference. Unfortunately, we didn't have a fit Matt to send in there to go and ask the questions. But fortunately, he was asked questions. And Stephanie Mars, the Canadian journalist, tweeted some of the quotes that came out of that press conference. Many of them very similar to what he said to Matt yesterday about his reason for picking him, that he has no regrets, that all the sort of things he said yesterday. But his final line really is worth stating here, which is that if Rajiv was here or not, those guys, meaning Italy, were going to win today. They played well and they're too good. Now, that may well be, but Rajiv Ram didn't get the chance to have a say in that, did he?
I did find that line extraordinary. Because, I mean, it's a total logic fail, isn't it? There's a reason why we play tennis matches. Anything can happen in sport. And, you know, some Bellelli and Fanini, yes, they were on fire today, but that was all circumstantial. You know, create a different recipe and maybe they wouldn't have been on fire. Who knows? That's an absurd hypothetical.
It's the sort of thing you do say, isn't it, to justify your own selection, to back up your own team that you have picked, and to give credit to your opponents. But in this particular instance, I think it is actually, and I don't think Marty Fish means to do this, but I think he's disrespecting Rajiv Ram again in that quote.
I agree. I totally think that's not his intention. I think he's just trying to deflect a little bit. Maybe it's a throwaway line. I don't know. I've only seen the quotes written down, but I think it is disrespectful to Rajiv Ram. And I think this whole episode has been disrespectful to Rajiv Ram. I mean, as I said in the preview show, they've said, we'd rather have nobody than have you.
Yeah.
It's
not great, is it?
It's not great.
It hasn't aged well either.
No.
So there's some work that needs to be done in that US team room.
And I think, okay, if it's about Jack Sock and who he plays best with slash who he wants to play with. Look, Jack Sock is a very good doubles player. He's won Grand Slams in doubles.
Not that good, though, is he?
Been a very good singles player, but he's not that good that you can call the shots to that extent, whether it's him directly calling the shots or indirectly kind of, you know, Marty Fish basing the team around him. He's not, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo 10 years ago in the Portugal team. Well, you know what I mean?
It's not John McEnroe or anybody the way it used to be.
No, it is not. That is not the situation with Jack Sock. And he's not played since the Laver Cup in doubles. You know, before that, his, you know, I'm looking through his results here and it's not sort of, oh my God, this guy's first name on the team sheet type stuff. Now, okay, experience and pedigree counts as well as form, but it's okay, things can happen in sport and hindsight is a wonderful thing, but this was a questionable call before the hindsight.
I would agree. Do you know, my view on this is somewhat diluted by the way Canada ended up turning around their tie to win, which we'll come on to a little bit later, because I was going to aim the same accusation as I'm going to aim at the United States team here, which is they seemed to me too confident, those four players and the team generally. I think that they thought they were going to win. Not that they were, I'm not saying that they were underestimating their opponents, but I think they were overestimating themselves. I think that they, the body language I saw was of a team that was really taken by surprise by the fact that, that it wasn't happening for them. I think that they assumed they were going to win. Yeah, I think that they got a pretty big shock to the system there.
It never felt close, that doubles match. I think the score was actually, if anything, a bit flattering, 4-4.
Yeah.
Didn't feel close to me.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And as I say, we move on to the Canada against Germany tie, which Canada have won, and I did not see that victory coming after it went to the doubles. Now, if we just rewind a little bit, Jan-Adard Struff, who Matt had marked our cards about, and his rivalry against Denis Shapovalov, which this was actually their ninth meeting, and Struff came into it leading 5-3, and he won this one as well, 6-3, 4-6, 7-6. Now, Shapovalov hasn't been playing tennis lately. He's been on holiday. It's one of those really weird situations where he's ended his season, he's gone to the Maldives, compulsory, but then he hasn't stayed there and then gone off to his training block ahead of Australia. He's then come back onto the competitive court and played Davis Cup. Now, I can't be sure of this, but it felt to me like you're looking at a really rusty player here when he came out against Struff. And by the time sets two and three, as we'll get onto in the doubles, came around, he'd suddenly found his range, and he was playing lights out tennis. But he was erratic against Struff, and Struff is that methodical, forward, plodding tennis player who just comes thundering into the net time after time and hitting big shots.
Is that agricultural, the word you're
kind
looking
for, yeah,
David?
Actually, there's one other person who can join Stan Wawrinka on the farm, it's Jan Lennard Struff, I think. And there he was, just swiping away. And Shapovalov lost that match. And Felix Auger-Aliassime did his job. He performed like Taylor Fritz did, really. He was up against Oscar Otte, 7-6, 6-4. Those two players, Fritz and Auger-Aliassime, have made big strides in terms of not losing matches on the tour very often these days that they shouldn't lose. And here they were delivering for their team to get them back level at 1-1 all. But they're up against, in the doubles, in Kevin Kravets and Tim Puetz, a team that had never lost in the Davis Cup doubles, either one of them. Even 8 in a row, I think they'd won together. 11-0 for Kravets, 12-0 for Puetz. They won the first set 6-2 against Shapovalov, who still looked terribly out of form, and Vasek Pospisil, who I don't think had played a lot recently either. 6-2, and it was the most uneventful set of the week. It was the most straightforward, boring, one-sided set of the week. And if you had told me that there's going to be a comeback here, I would have laughed at you.
Maybe it was the ease with which that set was won that sparked the comeback that was to follow, because Denis Shapovalov hit a patch of form so sublime. Dare I say, David, Marin Cilic-esque. It was, I mean, feed it into my veins. It was absolutely mind-blowing, and maybe he just got so loose. Maybe that's what happened, because he is that kind of player, isn't he? Looks like he needs to be loose. The looser, the better. Mm. Those limbs going all over the place, those limbs diverging in completely opposite directions to produce his shots. It almost looks like he needs to be double-jointed in order for them to have their full effect. So maybe, you know, had it been a really tight first set and it would have been different, but the fact that it was so one-sided and almost becoming awkward, maybe that freed him up. I mean, Pospisil was good for the second and third set, but Shapovalov, I mean, that was the Shapovalov that got me so excited back 5 or 6 years ago when I first saw him. He just set me on fire.
I think
it was fearsome stuff.
I think as well it was an example of why a lot of people say a really good singles player will be a difference maker on the doubles court, because I don't think a doubles player could have done what he did today.
Yeah, he did just hit through them, didn't he? He wasn't doing it necessarily with doubles play, wasn't it? It was mostly from the back of the court, just hitting through them, just teeing off and hitting through them. And Puetz and Kravets looked shell-shocked. They didn't have chance to recover themselves. It was just suddenly all over.
They looked
a bit dazed,
yeah,
actually.
I agree. It was like a boxer who's outboxed the opponent for 8 rounds and then suddenly gets chinned. And they're like, whoa, where did that come from? I was listening to, it was quite interesting, at the end of the singles, the Auger-Aliassime singles, Colin Fleming in commentary said, surely they're going to put this guy on the court in the doubles, given the way the tie's gone so far and how he's just played. And he was piped up and pumped up. And I really thought, yeah, I think that's right. Given the doubles team they're up against, you would pick Auger-Aliassime, would you not, in this situation? And sure enough,
doesn't play any doubles though, does he, Felix?
And then
Shapovalov does play a lot.
Shapovalov and Pospisil came out. I even wonder whether they'd put those two together, to be quite honest, and have the two singles players up against the doubles team. And after the first set, again, you know, Colin's saying, why is Ogie Aliassime, world number six, one of the hottest players in the world right now, not on the court? And the evidence was overwhelming that this was a bad call from Frank Dantsevic, the Canadian captain. And, well, I mean, I think Ogie Aliassime may well have helped the comeback as well. But this was those two. I mean, a leadership role, I think, for Pospisil. He made a couple of big returns that sparked them. And then it was the Shapovalov show. And it was just, it was absolutely fantastic. And I was feeling after that first set a little bit like I felt about the American team, that I thought they were a bit overconfident, really, given, I think, it'd be very easy to say Canada are the favourites for this Davis Cup, given that they've got those two world-class players playing singles. And yet they'd lost one of their matches and they looked like they were gone up against a really good, organised Davis Cup team that has got a proper doubles team and everything like that. So I think massive credit needs to go to all that Canadian team, really, because they generated an electricity amongst them, and if you saw them at the end, how
it was
together,
good vibes on that bench, yeah. Wasn't it?
And you know,
it was lovely.
It actually made me think. Now I really believe they probably will win it, because that was the sort of celebration and combination that I think this event means the world to them now.
Yeah, I think you could be. Very well be right there, actually. And the chemistry with Dantsevic was very powerful, wasn't it? He was almost intruding on the court at points. He was leaping up from his chair when Shapovalov hit that streak in the doubles. Yeah, I was thinking, are you going to get a touchline ban here?
You're outside your technical area.
Yeah, it was. But it was the sort of tennis that makes you leap from your seat. I mean, he just took over that match, and you don't really see, you're right, you don't see that with doubles players so much, just one person dominating a court like that. It was like the others weren't there for a little while. It was really startling.
Yeah,
incredible.
Well, that means now that Italy plays against Canada on Saturday, in the second of the semi-finals, we go back to one tie per day, which is a bit of a relief. I mean, it's been an absolute tennis fest today, but I have basically sat here for 13 hours watching everything. I mean, I've very much enjoyed it, but it has rather played havoc with the rest of my life. But there we are. It means tomorrow we have Australia against Canada, against Croatia, Catherine. Now, the bad news is that both of our picks for the Davis Cup have gone.
Mm.
The good news is we no longer have to do that thing of, well, I've picked them, so now I have to, you know, we can now give an honest view on tomorrow's tie between Australia, which that feels like a heck of a long time ago that Australia won through to this semi-final, and Croatia. What do you think?
I think Croatia, David. I was thinking about this a lot earlier. I was pondering on whether I trust Marin Cilic. That was my philosophical internal debate, and I've decided that I do.
Ooh.
Yes.
To beat Alex de Minaur.
With reservations.
Who is the number one? That's a tough ask, isn't it?
Yeah, 51-49. But yeah, I think maybe I do after what I saw yesterday. And I certainly back Borna Coric. Incidentally, Borna Coric posted a video today on his various social platforms, a little edit of himself celebrating from the Croatia team bench. And I did not recognise him. Have you ever seen Borna Coric with hair longer than sort of buzz cut length?
No.
He's got hair.
He's been wearing a cap,
now,
hasn't
David.
He? So we haven't really clocked that.
He is unrecognisable, honestly.
Okay.
I really had to do a double take. I was like, who's this guy? Why is he trying to make it all about him? I was like, oh, he is the guy. It is all about him. Oh. yeah, I think Croatia could come down to the doubles.
Yeah.
And of course, we haven't seen Purcell and Ebden, have we? So
I would like to see that match, really.
Yeah, I would too. So it feels cruel to say I would still back Croatia in the doubles when I've, you know, not even clapped eyes on Max Purcell and Matt Ebden for 6 months. But I think I do give Croatia the edge.
That was the Wimbledon final, wasn't it, that we saw? Those two teams?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I do hope we get that. But I share Matt's view that Čorić goes in as a pretty big favourite against either Kokkinakis or Thompson, whoever. I wonder who Leighton Hewitt will pick for that. Do you think maybe he'll... I mean, surely Kokkinakis is the more explosive player and therefore maybe has a better chance game-wise.
I think so, yeah. I think he reads a lot into practice, doesn't he, Hewitt? I think a lot will be based on what he's seen from Kokkinakis over the last couple of days. There's obviously something that he's wanted to see from him that he hadn't at the time of his last tie. So I think he will... Something will have needed to have changed in the past couple of days for him to pick Kokkinakis. And I did think he looked a little bit off the boil in Turin. Obviously, that was doubles. That was on a court with Nick Kyrgios. There was all sorts going on there. But I would understand if he ended up going with Jordan Thompson, even though on paper, Kyrgios, Kokkinakis is your pick.
Mm. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting choice, that. And we'll look forward to it. It's going to take place tomorrow at 4 o'clock local time.
So at a very reasonable hour.
Yes. You could have a lie-in, Catherine. You could have a nap and you'd still be able to make the start time at 3 p.m. our time.
It is going to clash with the England football, but I'm an expert multi-screener.
Yes. Well, so what are you thinking
we'll make it work.
England, USA. You confident?
I'm thinking England, David.
Okay. Yes, I'm feeling quite confident.
Coming home.
Okay. Fine. Well, so yeah, 3 o'clock UK time tomorrow, 4 o'clock Central European time, middle of the night for the Aussies. But anyway, I'm sure you'll be up to support your team. So it'll be very interesting to see how that one goes. We'll have another tennis podcast tomorrow night to tell you all about it and react to it. And hopefully we'll have Matt back, but the most important thing is we want Matt to be feeling a lot better than he was today. And to
wishing
that end,
well, Matt,
we are going to send him a picture of our mascot for this episode, Murphy. Murphy, Catherine, has the most wonderful eyes that just stare.
I'm looking at him.
Oh. And Murphy,
he's got the eyes and he's got the head tilt absolutely nailed.
Yes, absolutely. I can tell you, I was going to ask you what sort of breed you think it is, but I actually know. Have you any ideas from a visual perspective?
I think there's Doodle in there.
You are right.
Yeah?
Murphy is a six-year-old Australian Labradoodle.
Oh.
Nominated by Beth Elliott, and Beth says that Murphy is owned by... her good friend, Kerry from Troon. Murphy has dog epilepsy, which causes repeated seizures, but is full of love, energy, and mischief.
Bless him.
He loves cuddles and chasing balls on the beach and hates being in cars and strangers delivering things to the house. That seems to be a theme.
That's all very familiar.
Yes.
Billie Jean used to hate cars, and I've really... won that battle with her. So that Murphy's a bit older than Billie Jean, but you know, there's still hope, I would say. Strangers delivering things to the house is a lost cause for me, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, we've interrupted many a podcast for somebody ringing the doorbell and the accompanying Ferrari. Anyway, we're delighted to have Murphy as our mascot for this episode. We will be open for mascot business on December the 8th for our 2023 mascot, so make sure you note that down. We've got our own mascots as well for just a few more weeks of 2022, and they've been so great, including Darwin for me, Carter for Catherine, the dearly departed Gerald for Matt. We have Billie Jean the dog, sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Clark, Alana Kloss. We have Chris Albert-Lee and Carl Weingartner as our executive producers and top blokes. And we have some shout-outs that I'm going to have to read out today. So let's see how badly I can make this work. And apologies that you don't get Matt, but we'll do our very best. We'll do our very best for Tony Corbett. Tony with an I is from Newcastle in Australia and has been a listener since 2013 and is a big fan. And I think Tony's been in touch with me a few times. I think she actually has worked in tennis in the past. Anyway, very, very happy to have you on board, Tony.
Hello, Tony. Tennis Tonys.
Can't think of any.
Corbett. All I've got is John Corbett from Sex and the City.
All I've got is Ronnie Corbett from the two Ronnies.
Yep.
Not very helpful from a tennis perspective. So, Tony, you're a one-off.
Especially if Tony's in Australia, she might not know any of these references.
Look them up.
John Corbett was Aiden on Sex and the City.
Right.
Don't know why I've said that. Obviously, you don't know what I'm talking about.
No, not a clue. Tennis Tony. We'll think about
it. Well, we can do a male Tony Trabert.
Tony Roach?
Tony Roach, yeah.
Okay. Does it really count, though, if it's the wrong spelling?
No.
No.
Yeah, well, I'll go Tony Braxton of Unbreak My Heart fame.
I do remember that song.
That's with an I.
From the 90s. Goodness. What a strange turn this has taken. That was only our first shout-out. Our second one is for Andrew Greenough, who lives in Bristol in the UK, an exiled Yorkshireman, he says. Yeah. Andrew, remember when Andrew Murray was a name we used to say out loud?
Andrew Baron Murray.
Yes.
And Daniel Evans.
Which is actually quite...
And Stanislas Wawrinka.
That's right. And it's actually quite a fitting parallel to draw, because Andrew tells us that his first visit to the US Open was, I think like you, Catherine, in 2004. And he says, he remembers that, does Andrew? He says, I saw a promising Scottish lad called Andrew Murray win the boys' singles on court 10 in a feisty match against Sergei Stakhovsky. Wonder what happened to him.
That is excellent, Andrew.
Yeah. Very good work, Andrew, and thank you for being a friend.
Excellent additional info.
Indeed.
Thank you.
Got more additional info for the other three as well, Catherine. We've got Mark Savitsky, who is from Sydney in Australia, and Mark says he's been listening since the 2017 French Open and couldn't imagine following tennis without us. Oh, how nice is that? He says, I don't get to watch too much tennis with two small kids in the time zone, but the tennis podcast makes me feel like I'm keeping track of the tour week to week. Thank you. Well, thank you, Mark. Like Mark Philippoussis.
Thank you, Mark. And Mark Edmondson. Two Aussie Marks.
That's a good one. He was the last Australian man to win the Australian Open, wasn't he, in the 70s?
Yes.
And I remember we did a show about him a couple of years ago, or we did a show in which he came up, a sort of whatever happened to type show. I enjoyed that.
Ah. Yes.
So thank you, Mark. We also have Zach and Eileen from the Gold Coast in Australia who...
Oh, come on, Eileen. Never heard that before, have you?
I'm afraid this is just one big love-in for the tennis podcast, because Eileen says, we love, love, love the podcast. Zach is 13 years of age, plays tennis, and enjoys listening to the analysis that you do of the matches, and also a big fan of Matt's stat inside the newsletter. So make sure you sign up to the newsletter, folks. We listen to your podcast on the way to and from tournaments. Eileen says she loves Catherine's voice and how you are so eloquently articulate. We can't wait to see you at the Australian Open. How nice.
Oh, we like you, Eileen.
Yeah.
And Zach.
Absolutely.
Lovely stuff.
Oh, marvellous. We're all overcome with warmth and loveliness.
The name Zach always makes me think of Saved by the Bell still.
Yeah.
And it's very sad to think that 13-year-old Zach will have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about there.
Correct. Well, thank you, Zach and Eileen. And finally, we have Bob Murray from Andy Murray fame, who is from New Jersey in the United States. And Bob says, I'm an avid tennis player and have an amazing wife, Amanda, and three young boys, Bobby 7, Connor 5, and Luke 4. And he says that he said hello to me at the US Open final day of qualifying this year while I was at a table in the food area. And I do remember that. So thank you, Bob. It was lovely to say hello. He says, I listen to you so often, my boys regularly ask me to turn off the tennis people. You can't turn us off, kids. Sorry.
Well done for being from New Jersey. Are you a Bruce fan, is what I'd like to know.
I don't think anybody from New Jersey isn't.
Amanda Anisimova, David.
Well, I'm sure she is a fan now that she knows who he is.
I'm not.
Very funny. All right, Catherine. Well, we've got through it. All 44 minutes of a conversation without Matt that we weren't expecting. So quite proud.
It's like the bad old days.
Yeah. And let's just hope he's back with us tomorrow. And we'll certainly be back with lots to talk about from the first of the Davis Cup semi-finals between Australia and Croatia. Thank you for listening. Do tell your friends if you've enjoyed this show. Get them listening as well. Become a friend of the Tennis Podcast if you're not already, because that's how we keep this show on the road. And there are so many that you are friends of ours and now, and we appreciate your support enormously. Never ceases to amaze us just how kind people are who listen to this show, and we really appreciate it. So we're going to be back tomorrow with another one. We'll see you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.